Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You're listening to KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. July 3rd, Monday, we'll have a full moon called the Buck Moon because deer have shed their velvet by this time. It's also one of four supermoons this year, so I hope you can get out to see it. Well, that's about all the nature I have for you this week, because it's a double feature. Mid-June was the sixth anniversary of the show, so today we'll open with that first episode produced by Ken Lane on June 23rd, 2017, titled The Voice of the Desert. A quick note here, the subscription he mentions at the end of the show is now $50, not $25. And right on the heels of that episode, we'll have the latest of Ken's shows, produced June 23rd, 2023. It's titled Duel in the Desert. Enjoy.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
It's Friday night on the Mojave Desert. It's a little warm out there this evening. Seems to be kind of a recurring issue this time of year. But there are other things to worry about, like Yucca Man. The story you'll hear most often goes like this. There's a young Marine on guard duty in some far-off corner of the massive 29 Palms Desert Training Base. He hears an awful sound in the dark, something like a growl. Then the breathing. It's coming from one side of his lonesome little guard booth. And now it's coming from the other. It's circling him. He steps out into the dark, his sidearm drawn, and there it stands, 8 feet tall, an unbearable stench from its hairy body, the eyes glowing like red coals. Sometimes a Marine is knocked unconscious by the beast and found hours later by the next shift. In one version, the guard is at the old rifle range, and he wakes up to find a rifle bent in half. Since the 1970s, when the Mojave Desert base expanded from its World War II encampment, there have been regular reports of new recruits terrorized by both the Yucca Man and pranks inspired by the tales. But most sightings of the spectral creature come from campers and hikers at Joshua Tree National Park. Tents have been opened in the night by stinking monstrosities, and there is an occasional large footprint or blurry photograph submitted as evidence. A snapshot from the Hidden Valley campground has made the rounds for about a decade now. And the figure bounding over the boulders looks much like Bigfoot, the Yeti, Sasquatch. What are these things? Why are they seen all over the world? Anywhere where you've left a bit of trees, mountains, place to hide, the wilderness. Thousands of years of stories and never a body, never a bone. And yet people see them. People have been terrified by them. people have been followed by Yucca Man on a moonlit trail. Maybe just taking the recycling out on a summer night. What is the likelihood that these creatures exist in our physical realm? Well, it hardly matters if there's one following you at night. It's real enough, isn't it? Maybe they just hop into our world and vanish at will. Since the 1960s, when tales of Yucca Man and his desert cohorts were commonly reported by Southern California newspapers and television stations, cryptozoologists and Bigfoot researchers have analyzed the blurry pictures and measured the prints in the sand, all in the effort to document a flesh and blood creature they believe exists alongside everyday mammals such as bears, coyotes, and rock climbers. They've been seen in the suburbs of the Antelope Valley in the 60s and in the 70s into the early 80s as new housing developments in Lancaster and Palmdale pushed into the wild desert and secret technology was tested at Edwards Air Force Base and Lockheed's notorious Skunk Works facility. According to the Antelope Valley Daily Ledger Gazette, the creature likes to run around houses and leaving footprints. That is its MO in the East Lancaster area where footprints were found around several houses. One woman reported that the creature ran around her house and scratched at the door like a dog. A small boy sent to tell his father that supper was ready was found hours later, crying near the horse corral. When asked what happened to him, he answered that a big, furry man would not let him pass. In March of 1973, in the West Mojave, a babysitter and three Marines, separately we presume, reported seeing the Sasquatch. Nerves were frayed to the point that two separate vigilante groups searching for the monster nearly killed each other 2 months later. The groups came across each other in a wash by night. With nerves frayed and their sight limited by darkness, both groups began firing at each other. Yucca Man wasn't there at all that night.
I saw a program where they were going over there to this country and they have streetcars. And they have to update their streetcars every 10 or 20 years or so as they wear out. But they have these nice old streetcars, and they just scrap them. And I thought, well, you know, with all the restrictions of building new things and all that in the valley, would it might just be easy if I could just get these cars and set them up out there on lots, kind of like the homestead cabins, turn them into housing for people to then use as rentals for Airbnb directly to, you know, tourists from all around the world.
It's
I thought you could make some money at it, and so I looked into it.
And you have placed, according to the article, the first nine of these side by side on, what is it, a 2.5-acre lot?
Yes, that's right.
The complaint, as I'm sure you've heard, is that this looks more like a auto junkyard than a homestead cabin sitting alone on 10 acres out in Wonder Valley or what have you.
Oh, well, I mean, you know, you could always say the argument that beauty is in the eye of the beholder. But I tend to think that the streetcars have a certain, I don't know, majestic beauty, the way they stand out there on the landscape, very prominent. And I think they're quite attractive, and I think they complement the look of the area.
You're listening to Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert. We recently paid a visit to the Pioneer Town Ranch of Jeremy Kenyon Lockyer Corbell. He is the man behind ExtraordinaryBeliefs.com. He makes documentary films about weird, wild stuff.
So my name is Jeremy Corbell, and we are in Pioneer Town, California. Very specifically, we're at Cultus Camp, which is on my acreage here in Pioneer Town, and it's the most beautiful place that I've ever been in my life. Well, look, man, my life is kind of like the Twilight Zone, but everything is real that I'm investigating. And just to give a background to it, you know, I've been looking into these anomalous events, from UFOs to paranormal to even sightings of creatures, and I have never seen a single thing in my life. So that's the irony. In fact, I'm the guy that always has his back turned or is inside when something, you know, out of the norm happens. So I had never seen anything anomalous, truly anomalous, besides, you know, little lights in the sky, I can't explain, but nothing truly anomalous all my life looking into this phenomenon until I moved here. And that was the first time that I can say I have witnessed something that I can't explain. And it's not super dramatic like what we were talking about before, but for me it was the first indication that this phenomenon, it may be looking back, or in some way it might have shown itself to me. So I'll tell you that story. But what's funny is I'm the guy that usually never sees anything. When we first moved onto this land, you know, we're looking at the sky, and all my friends joke with me about UFOs. I'm the UFO hunter. I'm the, you know, hunter of the skinwalker. The you know, they think it's funny. So I go inside to get night vision, because you can see about 75,000 times more stars, and it's just incredible what you can see through infrared. And as I go inside, everybody starts screaming, my wife included, and they see right here, about where we're sitting right now, this, I mean, it's a weird description, but like a green glowing plate, like, you know, maybe 4 feet, 6 feet in diameter, just zip with a stepping motion, doop, 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 like that, right across literally where we are now over to there. And there's no lights here. I mean, this is the middle of nowhere where we're sitting right now. So I missed that, and they were screaming about it, and these are people that love me and wouldn't lie to me, but then they started teasing me because I missed it. So I thought I would never see anything in my entire life, and I've never shared this story before, but I have, with a friend, had a very bizarre experience, a sighting here on this land. There's a really strange colored light, in the sense it was really amber, and it was also extremely large and kind of luminous. You know, my initial thought was maybe a helicopter was pointing its front beam right at us or something, because it didn't seem that far away, but we couldn't tell, you know, because it's just kind of above the mesa, so you just have sky, so you can't really tell how big it is. So I look at it, I go, I don't know, and then it drops down in front of the mesa. Now the mesa, from where I live, it's about 1,000 meters, I would say. The fact that it dropped down over the ridge of the mesa and started splashing this amber light onto the mesa, totally silent. And I have drones, and I know what they look like and how much weight they could carry for lights or something, and the sound, we're talking absolute silence. The object was big, and how I know that is when it dropped in front of the mesa, the sphere itself, I took with my telescope and I did a measurement. So it was 5 to 9 feet in diameter, which is huge for something that seemed to be intelligently controlled, but just moving nice and slow. So my friend starts freaking out, because at that point, it's the first time he's ever even thought about seeing something. I wish I'd seen something before, you know, but this is the first time this is unusual. So, because we're just talking about UFOs, you know? So this thing then drops down in front of the mesa. I'm watching this beautiful amber light splash onto the mesa, and then it starts coming towards us. And you could tell that because not just by the light size increasing, you know, the circle or globe of light increasing, but because of where the light was splashing. So it starts coming down the mesa and starts coming across my property up towards us, and we could see the Joshua trees kind of being illuminated as it's coming closer. And then my friend got real scared. You know, he had a lot of fear, because all of a sudden this was not just something in the sky. This was something close to the ground that's coming towards us directly in a straight line. So it's coming over, and I know exactly where it stopped, and I measured it. and it was just about 200 yards from where we were sitting, because I know the exact Joshua tree that was being lit up, you know, the splash of it. And it was about 8 feet above that Joshua tree. I know that too. This thing was coming towards us silently, slowly, and it appeared to have this amber, really beautiful amber hue, like almost like a swirling in it. But it was a light, but it wasn't acting like a floodlight. It was more like a glow. It just slowly retreated back up towards the mesa, kind of climbed up, you know, maybe 200 feet, and then started moving to the right, nice and gracefully, and it just went away. So this is the first time in my life, I mean, like, I want to see a flying saucer, I want to see a disc, I want to see a ship, I want to see a black triangle, I would love to see that, a mothership. I mean, I interview people all the time that have seen those things. That's not what I saw. But what I did see, I don't have any rational explanation for. The most rational explanation I have is that it was a UFO, an unidentified floating object. You know, it was really how I'd describe it. It was kind of floating, almost, like on the sea, like a ping pong ball on the sea, just kind of floating. And that was the first real anomalous sighting. That is the first time I have seen something I cannot rationally write off. There was no structure. It was a self-contained, luminous globe of amber undulating light that controlled its movements down my mesa and towards us, splashing light, just as we're talking about UFOs, almost as if it's being like, you want to watch me? Well, I'm watching you. I had no fear. My friend was a little freaked out, but I didn't sense any fear. I just kind of watched it in awe, and it was beautiful. And it's just funny because I'm a filmmaker. I'm supposed to document things. There are non-human intelligences engaging humanity since the beginning of recorded human history. There is a bigger phenomenon occurring that goes far beyond lights in the sky or even flying saucers. And that's what I'm interested in. So the idea that it is engaging humanity throughout time with this physical pattern of reinforcement means it's trying to influence us somehow. But just what is it doing? That's the big question. But the film is based upon a book by Anthony Burgess, and the book was called The Clockwork Orange. So what impacted me about this book and why this started formulating in my mind is that I know that what we're seeing as UFOs, that is a display, that is not in fact the whole truth, but it is an element of the truth, or it is an angle of the truth, like a prism, 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 right? So the idea UFOs are a clockwork orange is kind of looking at the possibility that the UFO phenomenon is a display, but it might be a display of a mechanistic intelligence, kind of like an artificial intelligence that is manipulating the consciousness and thoughts and culture of humanity. There's one thing to say you've got a biological entity controlling a craft, but there's another thing to say that you've got some sort of artificial intelligence that is controlling biological cyborgs, like cybernetics. The idea that we create that too. We create systems through biology, almost like physical computers, you know, biological computers. We're toying with that now. So the idea that what we're witnessing with the phenomenon that includes UFOs is in fact mechanistic or robotic in nature, that this intelligence is displaying things that we can understand, like biological entities, physical hard craft, because the UFO phenomenon has changed over the years depending on where our culture is. So in the late 1800s, they were displaying to humanity these airships, highly documented, almost like blimps with wings and funny things. And now, moving into the modern era after, you know, post BL instead of, you know, post Bob Lazar. After his story came out, Area 51 and S4, the back engineering of 9 craft, or 9 craft being stored at this facility by Groom Lake. We now, we've been seeing since the 50s these craft as flying saucers. And so there has been accounts of flying saucers before that, but I'm just saying the phenomenon shows itself in different ways to different people, and it shows you these biological entities, but it is not sociable. These entities, it makes mistakes. There tends to be this kind of glitch in the matrix when people engage the phenomenon. It's like it's not a perfect encounter. There are things that appear to be mistakes. Now, or they're given, a lot of people I talk with, a lot of close encounters that people have, they're given a very strong impression. Like, some of them have been shown a film in an actual theater. And it's the common story that these beings tell people when they engage them. Destruction of the earth, don't hurt your earth, nuclear weapons, you're in big trouble, basically. It's a straight, but they don't ever give solutions. It's like almost as if they want to experience your fear. And that's what's really interesting. It's almost as if they provoke fear because they get something from that. So my name is Jeremy Kenyon Lockyer Corbell, and I am an investigative filmmaker, and I primarily deal with, in my films, the topic of UFOs and the unknown. So I call my work Extraordinary Beliefs. All my work can be found at extraordinarybeliefs.com, and you can see, weeks of free footage and articles and stories. And again, it's like the Twilight Zone, except everything I report on, to a degree, is real, meaning I do believe the people who I report on. I do not report on people who I think are making stuff up. So out of all my work that you can see online, I think the one to look at first, it's a feature-length film called Patient 17, and on October 10th, 2017, it will premiere, and it will premiere on your television at home, and it's about the alleged alien implant removal surgery performed by Dr. Roger Lear, the mysterious Mojave. And so I love living out here, but I kind of want to keep it a secret, man, because, it will leave if we're too loud.
It's time for the Desert Oracle mailbag. Dear Desert Oracle, I already subscribed to your awesome quarterly. Am finally heading down to explore one or two of the deserts. I have a week. I am not asking you to be a tour guide, but can you give me a suggestion of what is realistic to cover in 7 days? Also looking for some off-the-beaten-path stuff, meeting locals, and stuff like that. Any advice you can shoot my way will be greatly appreciated. Thanks in advance, Dimitri Urban. Well, Dimitri, just off I-15 on the way to Vegas, north of Gene, where that one weird casino is? There's a place called the Pioneer Saloon. It's only about a mile off the interstate, but it feels like, 1860 or something. You can pull off in Zizek's as well. Zizek's Road on the I-15 in California. There's a desert study center there. The whole place was built by Curtis Springer, Doc Springer, the founder of Zizek's, until the Bureau of Land Management kindly reminded him that he did not own that property. Just outside of Red Rock Canyon State Park in the western Mojave, there is a complete dining set in the wash. Table, chairs, probably even some silverware. Just bring your own food and please do clean up after yourself for once. Now, in the middle of Nevada, There's a run-down old town with only one lodging choice. The place is called the Clown Motel. Look it up. I will not give you the address. And there's a large boulder not far from Coyote Hole and Joshua Tree, and it looks exactly like a horned lizard from one side. A giant horned lizard. You know, you can look around in the bushes and spot a real horned lizard for scale and etc. The other side of the boulder looks more or less like the Ridley Scott alien monster designed by H.R. Giger. Got all kinds of tracks here. Quail. Lizards going up under that black brush here. Now these little ones on the bank right here, that's all from kangaroo rats up and down. You can see that long tail dragging while they hop. Now we come back this way in an hour or so, we're going to have kit fox tracks. Where kangaroo rats are plentiful, the desert kit fox is abundant. You know who said that, right? Dr. Edmund Yeager, a great desert biologist. He lived for many years in a plank shack in the canyon at Palm Springs, right where the tennis club sits today. Now, let's take a look behind these boulders. There's something kind of strange. Just kind of watch your step here. Now, you see this sort of countertop, like an old marble countertop, I suppose. It's white, and like porcelain, isn't it? Now, there's somebody buried below here. I mean, it is beautiful. I can't see a hint of the town from here. Now, here is something very interesting. It's a pencil cholla cactus. But look here. It's blooming. It's very small flowers. Very small flowers for a cactus. Of course, it's a pencil cholla with these very small branches, like a pencil, but with thorns. Imagine giving a kid a pencil with thorns. Friends, are you tired of receiving magazines in your mailbox that you never subscribe to? The Desert Oracle will never send you an issue unless you have paid for it. It's a handsome, pocket-sized field guide to the vast and intriguing American desert. The Desert Oracle contains strange tales, eloquent prose, noteworthy regional occurrences, maps and illustrations. It's a digest-sized journal fully supported by subscribers like yourself. No advertising, no filler, and you will cherish each beautiful copy and want to collect them all. Order now at DesertOracle.com. That's DesertOracle.com. Or send just $25 by check or money order to Desert Oracle, Post Office Box 1735, Joshua Tree, California, 92252. You'll receive four delightful issues of the Desert Oracle, and you'll be so glad you did. Thank you for tuning in tonight for Desert Oracle Radio. Fridays at 10 p.m. here on Z1077 FM, KCDZ in Joshua Tree, and streaming live at Z1077FM.com. Write to us. It's radio at DesertOracle.com. And good night from the voice of the desert.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. The land of the champagne climate. The
I used to put that on the real estate brochures where I lived for a while out by Phelan and Pinyon Hills. The Cajon Pass side of the high desert. Well, where David Hockney took a couple hundred clear, striking photographs of a crossroads at the 138 or Pear Blossom Highway, like the finished artwork is called. More than 800 photographs, say the experts. I've never counted them all myself. Although I have seen the real thing. I think it was at the Getty in Los Angeles a long time ago, but for reasons I've never been able to find out, David Hockney's most famous and beloved work, along with a couple of those swimming pool paintings, is not displayed there at the Getty anymore, at the museum in the city where everybody is nuts for Joshua trees. It hasn't been out for years. And these are two of probably the most famous photo collages on Earth. Two variations with jarring differences. The second version of Pear Blossom Highway, 11/18/1986, has a serenity to it. The sky is radiating a welcoming blue. There's a little bit of trash on the road, not much. There's an empty Bud Light carton. And a couple of long neck bottles and an empty quart of motor oil. But the Joshua trees look healthy and the road is wide open. Then there's number one, the aspect narrowed from the widescreen splendor of the other. The sky is now gray and menacing. The prints layered heavy over one another like you see in a microscopic view of an insect's armor. The stop ahead sign is mutated to the point of dangerous confusion, with the other road signs in a tight jumble right behind it, and the Joshua trees look to be dying. Crossroads ahead are chopped up into strange conditions and dangerous sections. The photos with very different lighting that you get when churning gray-blue clouds roll through the way the shafts of yellow sunlight pierce the gloom. The wind comes out of nowhere, out of nothing. Suddenly the garbage cans are rolling down the road. Semi-trucks have their fog lights on. You look around and have the strange suspicion that everybody around you is a criminal of one kind or another. That highway patrolman in the black and white who guiltily looks away when you catch his eye. The lady cries. sun that's stubbornly going exactly your speed during this last mile of passing lane? And everywhere on the desert plain, the ghost of the pronghorn antelope who once roamed here in great numbers, with a great innocence. Here in the Antelope Valley, two personalities of one entity, I think. These two versions of Hockney's Pear Blossom Highway collage. Let's see if we can encourage the Getty to get this out there again, get it out of storage, maybe do a high desert arts exhibit. Get all the big names in there, Lily Stockman, Dan Sullivan, Jack Pearson, etc., etc. Narrated by Desert Oracle Radio. On those little headphone sets they loan you at the museum entrance. What is a champagne climate anyway? I asked around and feeling and nobody knew. I asked around in Pinyon Hills, nobody had a clue. I figured it must have something to do with the fact that the Mojave High Desert does have some seasonal variations compared to the other side of the hill, the other side of the transverse ranges. Let's see, there's a bitterly cold, occasionally snowy winter season. And then there's two nice weeks, which we call spring. And then 8 or 9 months of sun-blasted oven temperatures. Three seasons, according to the weather experts. That's the usual. And then you get that every 10 years lingering springtime like we got this year. And these are the times when you say, you know what? I think I could live here. I don't even care about the scorpions and the Mojave rattlesnakes with two kinds of venom in every bite. And the wind ripping off my roof every 18 months and the way the fence collects all the Walmart bags that time cannot decay. Right there for you to enjoy when you arrive home. I just love it here. And a real estate agent is usually egging you on at this point, keeps refilling your wine glass with champagne. This is Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting from Joshua Tree. With soundscapes by Red Blue Black Silver. Last weekend, I was wandering around our desert mountains thinking about the times at hand, being overwhelmed by indifference, etc. thinking about the diminishing value of words. How the mere length of a block of text is often enough to dismiss it entirely out of hand. I'm not reading all that. Arguments never work except to exhaust the other person to the point where they are looking up the waiting period on gun purchases again. Which is why the people who are wrong always want to argue about it. The point is to wear you out. And the arguer always believes that means they've won, when in actuality they've simply earned a place in the list of people to ignore forever. You see it sometimes, like with elderly married couples at the RV park. One person just will not shut up. And the other person doesn't say a word. Who won? Nobody, of course, but at least the quiet person has retained a shred of human dignity in a public place. And I started thinking about the way we used to settle things out here, which was with a six gun. Here to do some business with a big iron on his hip. And it's sort of that way now in America. Today, you just have to assume that anybody making trouble is armed and dangerous. Anything might set them off. They don't like your bumper sticker. They don't like the words on your t-shirt. But we've lost the ceremony, the ritual elements. One person stands on this end, the other person stands over here. It's a duel. Like our great vice president, whoever, from the Hamilton musical. No more talking on the cable news because you took care of it in a duel. History does not repeat, but it does echo. It echoes like the gunfire in a good old-fashioned duel. So for days, I was pulling books off the shelves and reading about gunfights and duels and digging up these old newspaper stories, wondering why this was on my mind. And then, in the middle of this week, I figured it out. It was in the air. Two of the worst people around, absolute cartoon villains, decided in public on Twitter, I believe, to have a cage fight. In Las Vegas. To the death, I imagine. There's the Tesla guy, the guy who made electric cars uncool in 1 year. And the Facebook demon. And this is how things will go in the wild times to come. Horrible people on social media will challenge each other to duels in public and begin killing each other. And of course, everybody wants to watch that. No scriptwriters needed. Cheez-Its will sponsor it, or Red Bull, or TurboTax, one of those terrible brands. Of course, it will be more vulgar, more horrific than any Old West gunfight. because the gimmick is going to be people killing each other with their own hands. Celebrities, business rivals. A lot of people in Congress will be doing this. A lot of well-known people who don't have to work too much spend a lot of their time training, often for years, with ex-Navy SEALs and all these other ninja warrior types who get 10 million people watching their video game streaming sessions or whatever. I guess I don't know why these people are famous, but I see their names show up. You look at the news and it's like a police blotter. YouTuber jailed forever in Transylvania for running sex slave farms, that kind of stuff. Some weird dweeb in a flop superhero movie sentenced for strangling a girl in Iceland, modern celebrities. So I went back to my collection of gunfight stories from the last century, from here and there. Let me share a couple of these with you. Just some highlights. From the Arizona newspaper, September 23rd of 1932. Killing of Gila rancher held justified by a coroner's jury. Globe, Arizona, September 22. Dick Robinson, cowpuncher, was at liberty tonight, having been exonerated of blame today for the killing of his former employer, Z. Hayes, a widely known cattleman, during a bunkhouse duel at the Circle 7 Ranch. The coroner's jury declared Hayes came to his death as the result of gunshot wounds at the hands of Dick Robinson and said the killing, quote, under the circumstances was excusable and justifiable under the law. County Attorney Roland W. Hill said there is no evidence for prosecution. And insomuch as the coroner does not see fit to issue a warrant, we can do no more. The two engaged in a gunfight yesterday morning when, Robinson said, Hayes entered his bunkhouse and opened fire after renewing a quarrel started the day before. Two gunshot wounds were found in Hayes' body. One was through the heart. Arnold Johnson, a cowboy sleeping in a bunk close to Robinson's, testified at the inquest. He said he was awakened by the shots to see Hayes standing over Robinson's bunk, firing into it. The whole argument was over Hayes wanting Robinson to open a gate for him on the ranch, and Robinson continuing with the job he was currently doing. It's another reason to never work for anybody. This one was from the Douglas, Oklahoma Daily Dispatch back in December of 1926, December 12. Woman kills man in revolver duel upon Perry, Oklahoma Street. There we go. A woman's aim was the more deadly, and Bill Dearborn, 59, was dead tonight as the result of a gunfight on the main street this afternoon with Mrs. Ellis Hobbs, 30, They used to do that in newspapers. Women didn't have their own names if they were married. Mrs. Hobbs, who walked to the courthouse and surrendered to the sheriff immediately after the shooting, would make no statement. Bystanders, however, said a loud argument preceded the shooting. Dearborn is survived by a widow and two children. Mr. and Mrs. Hobbs have no children. It was said by acquaintances that the two families had been intimate. The duel was fought around Dearborn's automobile, which was parked on the street. Witnesses said Mrs. Hobbs produced a pistol and started shooting after ignoring Dearborn's demands that she enter the car. Dearborn took an automatic pistol from his car and, emerging from the opposite side, opened fire. Two bullets passed through the woman's coat, one going through a pocket and puncturing her powder puff, but neither struck her. Mrs. Hobbs' third shot struck Dearborn above the heart and he died almost instantly. The widow Dearborn, questioned by reporters, said, what are you going to do? Here's one from August 1940. Woman dies in gunfight, Stillwater, Oklahoma. Out of the muddled aftermath of a gun battle in which a woman was slain and two men wounded, officers pieced together a crime story reminiscent of Pretty Boy Floyd's day. You know, Pretty Boy Floyd, gather round, children, a story I will tell of Pretty Boy Floyd, the outlaw. Oklahoma knew him well. The body of red-haired Jean Coffey, 30 years old, widow of an ex-convict killed in a pistol duel 3 years previous, lay in an Oilton morgue as authorities sought to determine whether she died at the hands of police or her gunmen companions. She was tossed from a speeding sedan in downtown Oilton last night after a gunfight in which Ben D. Clark, police chief, and one of Mrs. Coffey's fugitive friends, Bill Hall, 25, were badly wounded. Hall, who escaped from the Oklahoma State Prison, and Joe Lovelace, 24, fugitive from a Nebraska State Prison farm, later kidnapped a farmer and drove on to Perkins, Oklahoma, where they were captured by two highway patrolmen. C.L. Irwin, constable, who was with Clark when the officers shot it out at close range with the gunmen, they expressed belief that the woman was slain accidentally in the furious exchange. Her body was torn by a blast from a shotgun carried by the fugitives, Irwin said. The exchange resulted from an attempt by Clark and Irwin to question the gunmen about a robbery earlier in the day. John Boyd and J.R. Butler, highway patrolmen, captured Hall and Lovelace after putting two more bullets into Hall's body and shooting Bill Glimp, a Drumright farmer kidnapped by the gunmen. Bill Hall, who was recovering despite his many wounds, said, "They killed her. She was the only thing I ever loved, but I got one of them." Those quotes from the hospital bed. They're so pure. from Amboy to Zizek's and across the great Mojave Wilderness and beyond, you have been listening to Desert Oracle Radio with Moody Desert Soundscapes by our own Red, Blue, Black, Silver. And I'm your host, Ken Lane. We are on the air Friday nights at 10 p.m. KCDZ 107.7 on your FM dial in the Mojave High Desert and beyond. And on 13, I believe we're at Lucky 13. Other community radio stations. You can find our Desert Oracle periodical all over the high desert. And I recently learned that the interesting hardware store, grocery store, deli, camping supply place in the Lucerne Valley has our Desert Oracle Volume 1 paperback book. 33 chapters of American desert mysteries and history and weird artists, animals, landscapes, death in the afternoon, and other times. Looks like they've got a lot of other useful desert books too, so stop by if you're going camping in the area or doing a road trip on that side of the Mojave. Our website is desertoracle.com. Click Desert Oracle Radio to read our weekly blog regarding this broadcast and other subjects. And you can subscribe to our print periodical, Desert Oracle, the pocket-sized magazine all about the strange American deserts. The weather forecasters say it's about to get hot, so enjoy these cool nights while you still can. Thanks for listening, and good night from the Voice of the Desert.
Thank you, Gallatin Valley, for listening and time traveling with me this week. As always, you can call me and leave a message about anything on your mind. The number is 406-404-6246. Remember to spread the word that you can hear this program on the air at 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 p.m. Sunday and 9 a.m. Monday. All of our Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgvm.org website. That's it for today. So till next time, listeners, be safe, stay well, and sweet dreams.